Hey, 4Play listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
For us, golf is simple. It's a chance to get out and have some fun with our friends. But inevitably, little things have a way of ruining it. The group ahead is taking forever, you can't find the fairway with a map, and the bev cart is nowhere to be found. And the best way to make a bad day better is Fireball Whiskey. You get their nips, the little shooters. They are great. Makes bad day way, way, way better. Make sure to grab the new Fireball Birdie Shot Club. It's literally a golf club filled with Fireball nip. Put it in your bag. It'll fit right in that side pocket. Drink Fireball nips and have a great time on the golf course.
It is March 2nd when you guys are listening to this. Colin Morikawa, we got really lucky. Colin Morikawa week, you know, we did all the TaylorMade stuff. We filmed it months ago. Colin Morikawa week is this week, and he just won on the PGA Tour yesterday. So we got timing-wise, teasers are coming out early because we're trying to capitalize as much as humanly possible on the fact that Morikawa, in a couple videos with us for the next 2 weeks, just got his fourth win on the PGA Tour. And then we have, for the second time, Brian Baumgartner in one of the funnier moments, I would say, in the history of 4Play, where I got my schedule all fucked up, and I'll tell you guys that entire story. But point is, for the first like 5 or 10 minutes, I wasn't there, and it was just Frankie and Trent and Brian, Kevin from the office. And the way it sounds like, and I just watched that clip, just nobody had any idea what to do or what was going on.
We were left on an island, kind of in our own separate universe, where we were like, do you interview this? I mean, it's Kevin from The Office. It's Brian Baumgartner. He's one of our favorite people in the world. Every time he comes on here, we all have huge smiles on our face just because his love for golf, his love for The Office, and just he's genuinely one of the funniest people we've ever talked to. And the fact that we're sitting in here, we know that we only have like 30 minutes with him. Riggs isn't answering the text. He's rushing back to his computer trying to get onto here. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know what to say to you, man. I'm not going to run this fucking thing. I don't have the stones to just start it. I wish I had the stones to just start an interview, but like, I wasn't prepared for that.
Me, I wish I had those stones as well. As I'm sure people have realized over time, it has become glaringly obvious that we have one host on the show that can actually run a show and run an interview. And Frankie and I, we are not those guys. So no. Brian comes into the Zoom and Riggs isn't here because he had a bit of a schedule mess up. And so Frankie and I just have to start sort of talking to him, but not wanting to get too much out of him because we want to wait for the interview. And it was just like we were talking about before we hopped on here. I think the clip ends up being about 4 minutes. It felt like 200 years while him and I and Brian were trying to figure out something to talk about.
Did you not like just tell him that you were going to wait for Riggs? So it was like this middle ground of, are we interviewing? Are we not interviewing? It was so like, was it just open water in terms of like what he thought was about to take place?
In the beginning, I was just talking to him and trying to be polite, like, hey, man, like, welcome back on the show, our favorite guest. And he's riffing back. And then it became glaringly obvious that we were stalling. He noticed we were stalling. Trent knew we were stalling. I knew we were stalling. Brian knew we were stalling. And I said, like, we have another guy coming here and he runs the show. And if we start this, it's going to be real messy. It's not going to be good. So let's just wait. And he's like, what a finely toothed comb. What did he say?
He called it a finely tuned Swiss watch of an operation that we have.
Well, I mean, you starting like that sounds like you're opening up the interview, like you're back on show. So he probably thought he was riffing. And then when you weren't, he was probably like, this is just a tease. Like,
I think I threw in a cool as I was like, cool. He's just like, what's going on here, guys? I got things to do.
I was like, you know, panicking, like I'd missed this other meeting. So then I got stuck. Like what happened was I just totally forgot I had a Barstool Classic meeting. Totally forgot. And I get a text from Jake that's like 10 minutes into it. And he's like, where are you? Everybody's waiting for you. I'm like, what? I'm at Chipotle. So I'm literally getting a burrito at Chipotle. And I'm like, I can't take the meeting. It takes 2 minutes to get my burrito. Go to the car. I'm like, I'll take the classic meeting in the car. Well, then my car is about 5 minutes away from my apartment. And I was like, this classic meeting is going to go right into an interview. And I'm not ready for an interview. I'm not at my computer. I'm like, what? And so the classic meeting is going. Next thing I know, I'm like, I'm just not going to be there on time. Like, I don't. So I'm panicking. I finally get to my computer. And when I checked into the interview and I appear, I could tell immediately. I was like, oh, no. Like, no. Nobody knows what's going on.
Well, and also what people might not understand is it's not just Brian. It's Brian's people are in like a, their cameras turned off. You can see they're in there. Our people, like Kelly, who's great, is in there. And so it's all of us. And everyone knows that me and Frankie are trying to delay until Riggs' screen pops up. And when that happens, it's anything could happen. So, and anything did happen. It was quite an exchange.
So people will enjoy it as always. He's very funny. He's got his chili. We talked The Office, and like Frankie said, I mean, The Office for most people, I think now has become a lot of different people's favorite show of all time. It is the most bingeable show in the history of television. And so for him to be a huge golf guy and to just be chatting, you know, going through office stories, just going through his life. He's a really funny guy. And having to start it for about 4 or 5 minutes with Frankie and Trent, it's very enjoyable. So Brian's coming up.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
What's up with your voice right now?
Yeah, just a bender of a weekend, you know.
Are you screaming?
Does sound a little hoarse. Mine sounds probably bad. Usually yours doesn't sound great right now.
Probably was screaming, maybe just talking too much. I don't know. I actually was panicking when I woke up. I was nervous to try to speak because I was like, oh no, do I not have a voice? And then this is what it came out. And I was like, all right, I can work with that. It's not great, but I can work with that.
Oddly, I think this Frankie, is the third yeah. time you've lost your voice on this show. Maybe fourth.
Dude, there
like
was...
you've lost your voice on it's a common occurrence, I think. You have a weak voice.
I'm upset about it. I think it's a mix of dehydration, drinking, my brother and two of my best buddies were in town for the weekend. So that mix, and I think I have a little bit of just a weak voice. Remember those Barstool radio shows I used to do when I would just lose my voice?
Yes.
Oh, those were, I'd sit down and the first thing I would say to Dave Portnoy after like 6 hours of being in the office, I'd sit right next to him and be like, all right, welcome back to Barstool. And I'm all hoarse. He's just like, what the fuck is that? So yeah, I've a little bit lost my voice. Is it that bad on your guys' end?
No, it's just noticeable.
Yeah, it's a little crackly. But then you were talking about the bender of a weekend, and then my mind just ran right to the picture of you just passed out in the golf cart, and I wanted to know the validity of that. I mean, did you honestly pass out in the middle of a round while driving, while your buddies were potentially on the green putting, it looked like? So in a matter of moments, you just fell asleep? Dude,
so that was I would equate it a little bit to the Frankie Borelli fat picture in a sense, and my buddy showed it to me the next day, and I was like, man, I'm going to get roasted for this, but this has to go out. Like, this picture just has to go out.
A great photo.
And I don't know. I was like, when did that happen? And this was, my buddy found that picture on his phone yesterday. So it had to have been at some point Saturday. And yeah, I might've just been out of the hole. I'm like, yeah, you guys take it from here. I don't really know. But apparently woke up after that. So we made it through the round, but there were, speaking of Owen's mixers, there were a lot of transfusions going around, and it was.
Well, I mean, if you're saying you're out of the hole, it's not like you're out of the hole for like a half hour to fall asleep. You're out of the hole for like a matter of like 2.5 minutes, maybe tops. So like you must have been, I mean, you were in one because you fell asleep at the drop of a hat to be like that. I mean, you look like not only are you asleep, looks like you're in like full REM cycle of where you're at in that mental state.
Like a deep slumber.
Right. Yeah. No, he's out.
That guy is out. And so, yeah, when I saw that picture, I was like, man, I think I have to tweet this. Like, this is this picture is off the chart. So yeah, all that I think is very clearly relating to the fact that I don't have much of a voice and it's been a little bit of a grind of a weekend. We have a lot coming up with our crew right here. I don't know how much we've spoken about it or told people, but Dad Bod Classic, which we talked about a lot last year because Lurch and myself were there, which is our friend Josh puts together this Ryder Cup trip. This is year three, and Frankie and Trent have gotten the invite as well this year. So we're going out to California at the end of this week, and this weekend we'll be playing a little golf at a little place called Pebble Beach for a buddy's Ryder Cup trip. And then we're going from there to film the next series of the Vegas Travel Show, which I don't think we've revealed either, but we are going to Las Vegas. So we'll be staying at the M Casino. That's the Penn Casino there. The M Hotel and Casino, where we're playing four different tracks and filming, you know, drone footage and doing the whole thing. So we got a lot of golf coming up. Very curious to see everybody's games because, again, I've had my TaylorMade stuff, but in terms of going to the Kingdom, getting fully fitted, Sim 2, the whole works. This is you guys' first real kind of show with the clubs, and I imagine you got to be really fired up.
Yeah, I know. I am. I was very positive about my game last week, but the more I think about, and it's going to have nothing to do with the Sim 2 or TaylorMade whatsoever. I just, you know, once I get out to Pebble, we're really going to find out how my game is. I'm a little nervous about it, if we're being honest. Like, I'd love to go to, you know, some Muni down the road before I try to unleash my game on Pebble Beach. But, you know, again, pull out the tiniest violin in the world and sing a song for me. But I'm excited to give it a try. I think they're going to be great. The way I see Riggs swing it, the way how far those balls go on with that Sim 2 Max driver, like, I'm just very excited. But I'd be lying to myself and everyone who's listening if I didn't say that I was a little bit nervous to see what happens.
The other thing is that, like, gets you excited, I think, when you have new clubs and you're going to, like, Pebble, is that when you take out that pitching wedge and you're on seven, like, you want that swing to be the most perfect ball flight you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
So not only is there pressure, like, all right, new sticks, these things look absolutely stunning. But, like, when I take out my 52-degree wedge or whatever on seven, I want to nip one to a foot to make sure that, like, everything's excellent. So there's excitement, but I feel like because it's not a Muni, and obviously it's like the opposite of a Muni, there's even more pressure to make sure that, like, you even play that much better. So I'm excited to get in town. I'm definitely going to get some range time in either that night or the morning of, and smack a bunch of balls to get in tune with it all. But I can't wait.
Yeah, we're playing Spanish Bay and Spyglass prior to Pebbles. So hopefully by the time we get to the seventh hole, we'll have somewhat of an idea of our game. I just want everyone to know that it's on you to get my head game correct. Regardless of whose team I'm on, I don't care. When I get to seven, do not let me pick the wrong club. I've played that hole already, and I tried to hit like a 52 degree as hard as I possibly could. I skull fucked it into the Pacific Ocean. Let me take, even if it's a nine, let me take the slower swing. I need someone to just reset me when I get to seven and be like, try and hit this green one time, because this is one of the best holes in golf history. Figure it out. Like, don't take the club that's going to take 110% swing to get there. Take something slow. Just get it in the air and get it on the green. I want to hit that green. My biggest goal of the whole weekend is to hit the green on seven.
I've never hit it either. Have you? So I assume you've never hit it. I mean,
never. Nope.
Now I've played it, I think, three times, but I never have hit seven green.
Nope. Never hit it.
You guys too, especially Trent and Frankie, when we were there the first time that you guys played it, I mean, we were all zombies. That was like, we flew across the country the night before and then filmed Dave's doing Mulligan Challenge all day. And then it was our turn to try to play. And I felt, I mean, that was at one point, Trent just laid starfish, I think, in like the fourth fairway, just trying to get through it.
That was the third fairway. I remember that vividly. The third fairway. Cause we started, where did we start? I think we started on four maybe, because it was just, they put us wherever they can put you. And so that was our last hole. And I was like, boys, this is far more activity than I ever do in a 12-hour span. And I'm just going to lay down on this third fairway, and I hope that I can get up. So you bring up an interesting point. This time around, I feel like this – obviously, you play Pebble. Every time you play Pebble, it's a very special experience. But this time, I'm going to be well-rested. I'm going to have my new clubs. I'm going to be excited. So now Frankie's got me thinking about the seventh hole, because now I really want to hit that green. I think the first time we played, I put it in one of the left bunkers. So that was devastating. But my golf game was way worse back then, as everyone can attest to. So now that my game is a little bit better, now I've got my sights set on seven as well.
Range session Thursday night is going to tell a lot of things.
100%.
Just like, do you have it? Because I've gone on these trips before. We did it at Chambers Bay. We've done it a bunch of times where, like, you just don't have the swing. Whether it just came off a really long winter and you haven't played in forever. I feel like we all generally have the swing, definitely Riggs right now. I feel like Lurch has played a decent amount of golf. You went down to Florida, you've done the thing, right? Like, you've played recently.
Right, but I haven't played in the last month or so, month and a half.
Okay, but it hasn't been like, a usual, like, totally. Average Joe Schmo five months
off, exactly.
I feel like we are going to be in somewhat of that good headspace where, like, we know what it takes to get the ball in the air, which I've gone on trips and been like, I don't know what it's going to do when I make contact with this ball, which I think I'll know what the ball's going to do. So I'm excited for it. I am really excited. I'm glad we're playing the other two first, because, like, I've never played Spanish Bay. I'm actually really excited for that. That's an unbelievable golf course. Yeah.
Spanish is sweet.
It's really, it's maybe even has like the, it's, it might be the most picturesque, obviously Pebbles Pebble, but Spanish Bay, like the whole golf course is on the water, and it is very, very beautiful. It's one of my favorite first tee shots. People kind of bitch about the course in terms of comparing the, you know, whatever, the architecture to all the other spots out there. And it's tough when you've got Cypress, you got Spyglass, you've got Pebble. But the first hole is very fun. It's like a funnel off the tee almost as like a par five. So you just step up and let it rip down towards the ocean. And it's a super friendly way to start. But the first range session of a golf trip is one of the most important moments of the year, I would say. Like, that just tells you a lot about what you're in for the next. And like you said, everybody wants to have their A game this 1 week of the year. This is like when you want to have your best game you've ever had, is this like Friday through Sunday. And there's so much pressure. And when you know you don't have it, it fucking sucks.
Frank, you got good memories of Pebble. They'll have a great memory on 8. Keep that in your head.
See, like, I see it. Yeah, me and 8 will meet again. And that, like, I'm assuming 8 wants its revenge on me because I went, I had an outer body experience last time. I shot 110, whatever I shot at Pebble, but I made a par on 8 with the wind in my face on a fucking amazing 3-wood to 5-iron draw into the ocean, like, came back. I'll never do that again. And I know I'll never do that again stepping up to the 8th tee, which is a bad headspace. So, biggest thing for me is get a good shot on 7 and also don't go in being nervous. Like, it's just a, it's like a bunch of guys who probably aren't that good. There's a couple of good players in the mix, but like everyone's out there to have a good time. I refuse to have nerves on the first tee.
You know what I did last night before I went to bed is if my mind is racing, I'll actually walk golf courses to try to like get my thoughts in order and not have them just like pinging off the walls about stuff I got to do or anything that I got to handle. So I walked Pebble Beach. And actually, on the first hole, it took me like, it felt like 10 minutes to get through it because I kept thinking of Molinari topping one just a couple of weeks ago off the first tee. And I was like, that just can't be you. That just like, if that's the one thing that you do is like, you know, it's not, you only have to play like a 200-yard shot out of the gate. Like you just, it's not difficult. You just can't top. And it took like, then I was like stressed thinking about that. I was like, oh, you just got to go to bed. And then it was like 1 a.m. And I was like, what the hell's going on? I just want to go to sleep.
That's something that's a common occurrence with you in bed. Like if a girl's with you and she's like, what are you doing, Ben? And she's like, I'm walking through 17 right now. Can you give me 5 more minutes?
Oh, no. You're the meme. Somebody will make this meme. I will make it or they'll make it. She'll be like, the girls roll over to the side. She's thinking, oh, I bet he's thinking about other girls.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's on the other side.
On the meme.
About, man, remember when Molinari topped it off the first tee? Well, that's going to be your meme.
It is. No. So I do that stuff like when my mind's racing to get it on one thought. And like golf's an easy one. You just kind of like think through playing the course. Give it a try sometime if your mind's racing. It actually works.
That's your version of counting sheep.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
I do that with hockey stats. What? Like if I'm thinking of a million things, like if I'm just, I can't go to sleep, I just pull up the NHL app and I just look at everyone's stats and what they did that night and how many they added. For some reason, it gets me going. Like I just like, I lock in. I forget about
that.
Yeah. I guess I didn't put one on one together, but like, that's kind of my version of walking a golf course. I do it almost every single night.
Lurk, do you get through the whole course or do you fall asleep?
No, I fall asleep. Usually, like, I make it through, like, I would say 7 to 12 holes, and then I'm asleep.
That made me think, speaking of The Office, when, like, Dwight Schrute is describing, like, his heaven, which is essentially he's, like, the manager of the hotel in hell as, like, the devil, and that's your way of thinking, like, oh, yeah, and your little fantasy where you're walking the golf course, you're thinking about topping the ball on first tee at Pebble Beach.
Exactly. It was a bad, obviously I had too many thoughts in my head. If like that, I couldn't get past the top off the first tee that I didn't even do. Molinari did it, but it's like been on repeat with a tracer, I feel like, on Instagram.
The first round I ever played at Pebble, which must've been 3 or 4 years ago with our buddy Josh. And we had like a twilight tee time at like 2:30. We weren't guaranteed to finish. It was kind of a last minute thing. We're like, yeah, hey, we're going to go play out there. Dude, I hit one 150 yards right off the tee into like those condos, and it was the most out of bounds ball you've ever seen, and that actually settled me down because I was like, well, all right, can't get any worse than that. Like,
my worst hole when we played it the first time was 12, that par 3. I kept hitting it right, And I must have, like, I probably hit three off the tee out of bounds right. And you guys are like, all right, let's walk up. Let's just walk up to the green and you can tee it back up on 13. I probably made you guys stand there. I hit four more balls off to the right and I thought I was going to murder somebody. So I'm a little intimidated by that hole. I'm intimidated by the entire golf course, we're being completely honest. But I've been watching on YouTube. They've got great flyovers of different courses, obviously, and Pebble is one of them. And that's just a fantastic watch. So I've been gearing up for it. I'm ready, but 12 is staring me in the face, and I'm nervous about it.
I would say you're going to get your teeth knocked in like 6 through 10. You're just like, you're going to take it. Certainly 8, 9, 10 are brutal golf holes. They're just hard.
Brutal. 10 is very scary.
Frankie's so hard and long and difficult, and if the wind's blowing.
Ho-hum. 8's a ho-hum par, no problem, but – 4, oddly, is the one that keeps me up at night. That was our first hole. It's got fence on the right, and everyone's like, Pebble Beach, Barstool, we're here. Like, we made it. Look how sick this is. I ripped the fucking – I have a driver. I'm ready to rock, and it just goes boom right off the fucking fence 100 miles an hour, and I couldn't get off the fence. I just kept, like – I couldn't get out of the fencing line. So that was probably the worst start to a golf – I think I made, like, a 9 or a 10, and I said, I want to go home immediately. Didn't even get to that 5 or 6 stretch. 6, 7, 8, 9, I didn't even care at that point.
That was tough. That was hard to watch. Jake Bass just asked, what's the over under on lost balls for each person for the weekend? And we kind of had the discussion of, I think, a month or so ago, of like, we all got like 12 dozen golf balls because we're TaylorMade athletes now. And it was like, who's going to lose the most first? I'm like halfway through them already. Like, they're going fast. So I'm excited to play some non-desert golf in the sense, like, yeah, there's cliffs and shit. You can still lose balls, but hopefully you won't lose as many as the desert. Because as you guys learn, like, when you miss a fairway out here, it's just gone. And you're just gone, which is rattling.
And then, three rounds.
I would say I lose 7 golf balls.
On the trip?
Yeah, on the 3 rounds, I think I lose 7.
I was going to say my over-under is 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that may be high, dude. I think we can go a decent amount of holes without losing one.
The only thing, though, dude, is like you can sneaky lose balls in places on Pebble. I mean, some places are obviously obvious at Pebble, but then there's like 3, the tee box that we'll play is kind of like buried back left, so you have to take it over the trees or – like push one away out to the right. Like, there's more places to lose the golf ball, I think, than you think.
What do you mean that we're going to play? What do these guys play? Like, these guys,
they just play the blue tees or whatever. So okay. Like, there's you got to hit it in some spots. And then I would say Spanish, you can sneaky lose golf balls in like a lot of different places there.
Yeah.
There's Spyglass too.
Spy, I feel like, is more open for whatever reason. I don't know. I've got good vibes about Spy. I mean, Spanish, I played like the best round of my life.
Dude, what'd you have, like 6 birdies or 7 birdies?
I had 6 birdies in a match play versus one other guy, and I was just killing him. And like, it was too bad because I think I was even or like under par through 12, and the match was over. And then I went like double, double, bogey, double, and found a 78. So I was like, all right, whatever.
Our buddy that Lurch played against that day thinks Lurch is like a college golfer. He's like, this guy.
I'm so good. It was like multiple par threes. I just step up. And I just hit it to like a foot. And then one time he put one on a par 3 to like 6 feet and was pumped and got like, he just won the whole prior. He's going to win this one. And I put it to like a foot and a half. He missed the putt, won that all. And this guy, he can fizzle. And this guy fizzled away. Plus, sexy. Shout out to you, buddy, but it wasn't your day.
Plus Lurch was like an 8. I think you were getting like 8 shots or something that day. It was, and he was clearly lower than that. So the whole thing was very fun, but you got good vibes there. It's going to be very fun. We're going to have a absolutely fantastic time. So,
Legs, give us your number, though, before we move on. How many balls do you think, like, you and Trent are going to lose? I'm interested.
I'm going to put my number at 20. And I also want – we should count. Everybody count.
For sure.
This would be a fun thing to report back on.
I'm going
to – 20 balls. Match. So many. There's so many lost golf balls. It's actually insane.
I think around your number, Lurch, 7-ish. Somewhere around there. For me?
The reason I said 20, Lurch is talking me into these. Like, I know I'm going to hit a couple into the ocean. Like, 9 and 10, I bet I just slice 2 or 3 off into the ocean. Like, there's no doubt about it. And then you're making me think that there's, like, these little nooks and crannies at Spanish Bay and Spy where they're going to disappear.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't mean to put that thought in your head. You'll be fine. Like, there's only it's more. I feel like at Pebble, it's cut grass. Like, if you're on the mainland, you should be able to find it because there's not a lot of like brush and shrubs. Where at Spanish, there's a little bit more like shrubs and brush that your ball can roll into.
I'm knocking my number down to 15.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm knocking my number
down. I think that's a sweet spot. Also, like, you're usually pretty good off the tee. So even if you don't play your best, you're usually still in play, I feel like.
Yeah, true. 15. Let's put it at 15.
Okay. I think mine's 7.5. Lurch, you're 7.5?
Yeah.
Dude, we may have lost 10 balls during the Pat Perez video alone, each.
Oh my God.
Easily. That was a bad day for
golf. I think I may have lost 12 that day. 12 pellets.
People don't know either. Like, you know, we're TaylorMade guys, so we got to use TaylorMade balls, which are fantastic. But, like, we're now on camera, and as we got to, like, the 14th, 15th hole, everybody started to panic that we just weren't going to be able to finish with enough TaylorMade golf balls, and we didn't know what to do. That's how many balls we were losing.
I would just swing and look at Lurch and be like, you got another ball? The ball hadn't even landed yet, and I'd just be like, I'm going to need another one of those balls that I've been asking for, you know, 3 hours straight at this point. And on 17, 18, big man was just like, I don't have them anymore. Okay. Quit asking.
Oh my God. I was going to pee my pants. You would hit one. Like that, big man.
We got an Alabama guy in here, but what's the clip of Nick Saban where it's like he's running off before halftime and he's like, quit asking.
I think it was Maria Taylor, and they were asking about Tua versus James Hurt, who's going to start. He goes, I don't got an answer, so quit asking.
Like, that's what Lurch was like on the 17, 18 holes at True North when I was asking him for golf balls.
Dude, at one point, I remember going into the trees, into the shrub, to try to find not a ball, but a TaylorMade ball somewhere in there, because I was like, we need more balls, and like, I'm not hitting right now. It's a scramble. I've already hit. Might as well just walk through the shrubs and see if I can find a TaylorMade ball to use.
Fuck.
Man, what a day. Hopefully we do not lose that many. I don't think that we will. I think our numbers are pretty accurate. I think we're going to be right around there, but it doesn't take much. Like, one bad day out there on one of those courses and you could go through, especially when you don't care as much now about like ball, like you can just lose them so easily.
I'm bringing 30 bullets. That's what I'm bringing.
30.
All right.
At least.
30.
At least. I'm not getting caught. I'm bringing 10 balls around.
I will say it does get a little sketchy. Like, first tee shot, you lose a ball, you're like that thing's gone forever.
Yeah, dude, I want that back to feel like Tic Tacs. I want to reach in there and I can grab five at a time and just fucking rip. Like, I don't ever want that feeling being like, oh boy, I only have five left.
Your caddy's gonna lose it when you got 24 golf balls to start the round. He's gonna like,
yeah, but I don't even know I don't know if they can even carry the bag because of COVID. That's why I was thinking about that. Like, I'm pretty sure I'll bear that cross.
I was getting my bag ready just the other night, and I probably put 24 golf balls in my bag. There's a lot of golf balls in my bag right now. Because I'm with you, Frankie. I have vowed to never have that feeling again where you're coming down the stretch and I don't have enough golf balls. Like, that's such a horrible feeling. It's like asking a guy in class for a pencil 900 times every day. But like, so now I just feel like if I have access to all these golf balls, I never want to have that feeling again.
My bags are going to be so heavy on this trip. It's actually crazy. I don't know how many pairs of golf shoes I'm bringing, but I think I'm bringing 5 or 6. I mean, G4 is one of our sponsors. I don't know that I can leave any of these pairs of shoes home. I think I'm going to change my shoes every single day we play golf. And that's going to make my bag super heavy because these are heavy ass shoes.
Our stuff's going to be heavy. You think anybody's over the 50 limit? I bet. Yep. I bet.
For sure. Dude.
We're all going to be over the 50 limit for sure.
We're going for like 10 days.
And also, like, it sounds like we're going to accumulate more clothes and stuff while we're there. So I'm going out. If I've got 45 pounds, I'm smoked coming back because I'm at 56. No problem. Also, when you play these courses, like, I'll probably buy some in the pro shop, like little this, little that, and then you leave and you just have 60 pounds.
I might have to pack a bag. In my bag.
Dude, I don't know that I'm allowed to bring. I don't know that I'm allowed to bring stuff home anymore. Like, I need to go rent something to go store it because, like, my girlfriend, people at my house are just, this can't happen. And, like, your closet is just a pro shop. And it's because like you're saying, not only do we have like the best sponsors in the world, but you go places. Like I go to Cherry Valley, my buddy Matt Cherry Valley, just every time we go there, he hands me another Peter Millar shirt. It's just like, dude, I can't take this home today. I can't. I thank you. I can't. And he goes, and then I walk back to my car. It's in my front seat somehow. I'm like, I just.
The other move that I do when I'm traveling with golf is I'll pack like in the golf bag. If I know it's going to be close to 50 pounds, I'll pack a little carry-on bag at the top that's empty. Because sometimes you give them the golf bag and it's like 56, you give them a big smile and then they're like, no big deal, big man, it's fine. But then other times they're like, nope, 50 pounds. And then so I take the carry-on bag out and then just start humming stuff in the carry-on and then take that onto the plane. So that's my move to evade that 50, because that's a cost. You get hit with that, like an extra 50 bucks.
It sucks when the person looks at you like, nope, not on my watch. Like, this is, you're going to get below 50, buddy. And you're just right. Like,
yeah.
Here so we go.
Sure? Are you sure? Like, look at this. Look at this. You guys are doing a skincare routine. You sure? And they're like, get that shit out of there.
What's man. And that, so you acquire a higher cost because technically it'll make them use more fuel, like the weight.
I have no idea. Maybe it's based on like insurance of like back injuries and whatnot. Like who, I don't know what that cost is associated to, but it's real when they give it to you that look like, no, you're not getting by me. It's like,
sucks.
The thought I think Frankie's trying to get to is like, it's not that we're over the limit on the plane now. Like if there was a hard and fast rule of how much weight was going to be allowed, like for instance, man, we're really hitting all the bases in terms of like, oh, we have all this golf stuff. Oh, we got to fly in a private jet one time. But like when Lurch was shoving bags into just shoving bags against the orders.
Bro,
of the
that was no lavish lifestyle. That was a like prop plane that barely ran. Like anyone that's like the four Playboys have sold out because they flew private. Bro, that was, I'd rather fly Spirit than what we flew that day. Like people on a Spirit flight that day had it better than us.
Yeah. Dude, I'll never forget when I was shoving bags into the back of that airplane and be like, no, this will fit. And the pilot was like, yeah, maybe. And I got them all in there. Trent, I mean, there was no color in your face. You were shot. And then shortly after that, they were like, with this weight now, we're going to have to stop in Charleston to refuel. And it was like, all right, that's legit. Like that usually doesn't happen over the loudspeaker of like, hey, we've accumulated too much weight on this airplane. We're going to have to make a pit stop. Well, you don't get that message ever.
Especially as Lurch is shoving me. He's like, no, my grandpa was a pilot. And he's like, what do you mean? And like, I needed the pilot in that moment to like have a bit of a backbone and a bit of a spine and be like, you cannot put those in there because otherwise this thing's going to go down.
Five seconds ago, we couldn't use it in the luggage area of the plane.
Right. Yep.
And then he just pushed it in.
The overall point, going back to the 50-pound thing, is it's not necessarily that that we put this extra weight on here and this motherfucker's going down. Like, that's not the point. The point is fuel, where it's like if you put this on here, it's going to take more to pull us across the country. We need more fuel, and that's going to why.
Dude, there's got to be some sort of calculation the pilots make based off of how, like, they can fly, based off how heavy the plane is, right? Like,
I'm sure.
And it's got to be to like the pound, no? Or do you think they ballpark it?
I bet you they have like on those big jets, there's probably like a 20% increase on all 50-pound bags. So like they're associating everybody gets two bags, 50 pounds each, you know, 100 was the standard, 140 pounds or 120 pounds would be a 20% increase.
My question is like, how do you then confidently fly the plane the way it needs to be flown if you don't know the exact weight? They're constantly adding an extra percentage onto these things. Like, doesn't the plane fly differently if it's at, let's say, 1,000?
No, I'm right. They have to know.
They have to know to the exact poundage. You would assume.
Yeah.
Like that plane has to fly differently. If I know anything about flying, like paper airplanes, if you put a fucking clip on there or anything, it changes it, dude. Well,
you're saying you fly paper airplanes associated with like a 747 jet is all time
buoyancy.
It must be a threshold thing. Like they must know up to a certain point we can fly this way. Like if we had been loading 50 bowling balls onto that private jet, he'd probably be like, no, you guys can't do that. But he probably saw that, oh, they're loading in like a couple more sets of clubs. That's not going to hit the threshold where this is going to dramatically change the way we fly this aircraft.
No.
Yeah.
Also, wasn't there a movie where they get stuck in the desert and the guy, there's a guy who like takes charge of the operation. He's like, no, no, if we put all these pieces together, we can build a plane. And then it turns out that he's a like a tiny model plane salesman.
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you gotta give. That's. I like that you're just finishing with your hand like this, but I got nothing for you there.
I was hoping somebody would know what I was talking about.
Do you put your phone on airplane mode when you get on a plane?
Not right away, but eventually.
No, I wait till it's I got no service. Like when it gets a couple thousand feet up and you actually lose LTE, then I go.
I think it's biggest sham. I mean, and make me one of those assholes like people like just listen to the fucking people that are saying turn it off. But boy, if my phone takes this thing down, they shouldn't let me have my phone on there. Like all phones should be confiscated at entry of a fucking flight. If the thought that I turn this thing on, that something bad's going to happen. Like even if it's one in a billion chance that my phone being on messes with some sort of signal and then it changes the flight of my flight, we should not be allowed to have phones on the plane. They should actually confiscate them like they do like weapons.
Right. Like,
so I just don't think it does anything.
There's a chance that it's a problem. Cannot allow me to operate this.
Correct.
I'm very much on that side, but I think I've heard that it's actually a courtesy to you because when you're up there, it's trying to constantly find towers to get service and it fucking drains your battery like crazy.
Yeah, it does do that for sure. But that shouldn't affect the way the plane's flying. So like to Frankie's point, like I think it is kind of a sham, but again, I'm not going to fight it either.
No, no, I don't want to be the asshole. I'm secretly never going to turn my phone on airplane mode.
Now, do you not, like, even when you're, like, 30,000 feet and you don't get service,
Yeah, maybe I do it to preserve battery because I do feel the way that Trent feels where it's like, all right, this is probably stupid. But I've gotten looks before where, like, you know, I've seen people, like, go into their pocket. They hit the phone off and they like ask this, like the flight attendant, like, can I please go turn my phone off in my luggage? Like they've been warped by this big plane company to just turn their phone off. Like I look at them like, what do you think's going to happen right now? If you don't frantically get into your fucking bag up ahead on top of your head and you don't turn that phone off. Like this happened to me on my last flight. The lady was like, oh my God, like, she raised her hand, was like, I need to get into my bag. I haven't turned my phone off yet. And I was like, oh, God.
Well, well, you are right in the fact that, like, if there was serious risk, I think, to the cell phones hurting the way the plane flies, potentially bringing it down, like, at a certain point, you'd have to turn your phone in and be like, no, no, no. Like, in order to get on this airplane, you can't bring your phone. So,
dude, I've said this about fucking cars. If, like why don't they just stop phones from working inside cars if they don't want people to text and drive? And like
that solves that problem, and now you got a whole list of other problems.
So like let there be like an emergency phone, right? Like, or like a number that you hit and you can call services or whatever.
No, I've thought about that too, and certainly within like accounts, like, so as like a parent, you have kids with phones. And there should be like an app that if this phone, because it's geolocated the whole time, is moving,
I think that exists,
15 miles an hour. Yeah, it's got it, right? Like then
that exists. Locked,
you can't use
that
it.
Definitely exists.
That exists because like, yeah, like I've seen that before where people have had their kids' phones lock when they're in the, like their phone can tell if it's moving at a certain
speed. Okay, yeah, so then we're good.
But I've always just thought like, you know, the world would be just a lot safer if within, once you close that door, there's some sort of system in which your phone doesn't really work that well. Only can make phone calls. Text messages don't work. Instagram doesn't work. Like social media, like you could actually pinpoint that when you open up certain apps. So like you're not fucking sitting there scrolling Twitter as you're driving on fucking Meadowbrook Parkway. It would help me. Like sometimes I'm just like sitting at a red light and I look at my phone. I'm like, what a fucking, like, you know, I'm always doing that shit.
I know. It's amazing how ineffective the whole I'm not driving swipe thing is. Like that's never stopped anybody. Like,
no, That's right. That feature that's like, are you driving? It's like, just get out of my way.
Are you, get off of my phone? What are you doing?
Dude, there's a feature. There's a feature where you can't, like, that my car won't let me change sometimes, like, a setting or the directions that I want to go while the car's moving. And it actually almost makes me get into accidents more because I'm just like, how do I bypass this setting? And I'm looking at the screen, the infotainment screen for 25 straight minutes. And I'm constantly just tapping this thing, just trying to figure out how to get that thing to move. You got something to say right now.
Yeah, the movie that no one knew, nobody on this show knew about, was Flight of the Phoenix. Dennis Quaid is in it. People are going to know what I'm talking about. Maybe I didn't explain it very well. I'm open to that possibility.
Well, I just think none of us have seen it.
You ever see Order of the Phoenix? Harry Potter?
It's Flight of the Phoenix, if I remember, is pretty good. And it's what I described. Their plane goes down. And for some reason, there's all these airplane parts on the plane. Like, they were shipping those across wherever. And they go down. I'm now just spoiling the movie for people who haven't seen it, including the people on this Zoom. But they go down, and they start to rebuild it because this guy's like, I know how to build airplanes. I'm an airplane builder. And then halfway through the movie, they figure out that he's a model airplane maker. And so but he was like, no, it's all, it's a size. I figured it all out. It's a pretty good reveal that
why was that information like revealed? Like, why couldn't he just be like, hey, like, you're acting like the fact that they found out he was a model airplane guy was the big reveal of the movie. Why didn't he just at the beginning be like, hey guys, I make these model airplanes. I think I know how to make a plane.
I don't know if you trust a guy who tells
you. So he withheld that information.
Huh?
He withheld the information that it was only model planes.
He did. Yes.
So that was their big reveal. And
that's
you won't
the
watch Molly.
At some point they find
you
out.
You won't watch Molly's Game, but you're going to watch a movie where the big reveal is that the guy actually makes model planes.
That's a good reveal under that premise of a movie, under that plot. Right?
I don't think so. I think if you're stuck in the desert and you're trying to make a plane, I think you want the information like, oh, like no one in the world knows how to make a plane, but this guy here makes model planes and like we should just take his word for it because if we don't take his word, we have no one's word. So why not take the guy who makes model airplanes over the grocery store fucking bagger that just landed on this plane with us too?
There may have been a reason why he was withholding that information. I saw the movie a long time ago. It came out in 2004, but that's just my recollection of it.
Okay.
Whoop. We'll talk about Whoop, ladies and gentlemen. It's the perfect time to do it. 2021, obviously here. It's March, like I said, which is unbelievable.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
WGC, Colin Morikawa gets the win, his fourth PGA Tour win. He's still very young. Probably the coolest, one of the cooler things I've seen are all the people, all the guys out there rocking red shirts and black pants in honor of Tiger Woods. Tiger tweeted out yesterday, it's hard to explain how touching today was when I turned on the TV and saw all the red shirts. To every golfer and every fan, you are truly helping me get through this tough time. If that didn't hit you in the feels a little bit, then you need to check your fucking pulse and your Whoop and see if you're alive. Because that hit me when I read that.
Well, and I did throw on a red shirt and a black hat yesterday, a Tiger Woods hat. So it really felt like he was talking right to me. Yeah, he was probably talking to Patrick Reed and Rory and Cameron Champ and all those guys. But seeing that when he said all the golfers and all the fans, it really felt like Tiger was in my apartment being like, you made me feel better today. And for that, I owe you a debt of gratitude.
I mean, when he's talking about fans and social media and him like seeing things, you had like 12,000 likes on your tweet. Like maybe that's the one he saw. I don't know. I don't know that there was one other bigger fan interaction on Twitter about someone wearing a Tiger Woods red shirt and black hat. There wasn't. You were the number one.
I want people to know that I don't want to make this about me. This was very much about Tiger Woods and all the other guys who wore it. But I know that I did my part yesterday, put on that red, tweeted it out, tweeted my support. So yeah, there's a chance it came across this timeline, and that makes me very, very happy.
There's a chance that Robbie Mack was like, Tiger, look at fucking Trent. Trent's rocking your outfit watching the golf today. Like, look at Trent. And Tiger was like, you know what? I'm going to tweet out about Trent and all these fucking people. That's not impossible.
I could have been the catalyst. I'm not saying that I was, but it's certainly a possibility. In all seriousness, it was very cool. Even Phil put one on, Annika Sorenstam. Like, it wasn't just the PGA Tour. You know, guys at the WGC, guys in Puerto Rico were doing it. LPGA Tour, senior champions tour, excuse me. And just across the board, people were wearing red and black, and it was a very, very cool day.
It was sweet to see. And I thought people looked good. Like, it reminded me, like, man, Tiger, no wonder he's so badass. That outfit is awesome. And you don't really see it in golf. Like, the red and the black, people don't really rock that. And then he's, like, NWO from, like, back in the wrestling days. He's just that color scheme, man, is Tiger. And seeing everybody, I thought they looked sharp. I thought they looked more intimidating. And they were all – it was just like, wow. And the guy, I mean, for him to clearly be that affected by it, you know, like, he's got to be in a dark place right now, obviously. And so, I'm happy our guy Tiger was able to get a little positive thoughts yesterday. And I thought Colin Morikawa, his post-round, the way that he articulated himself, talking about Tiger Woods and thanking Tiger Woods and bringing up the point that, like, far too often we don't, like, let people know how much we appreciate them, or we don't get to before they're gone. And he's like, so I would just like to take a moment and, like, thank Tiger Woods. I thought that was amazing when he did that.
He's such a stud. He's such a stud in every single way, on the golf course, off the golf course. Everything he does makes you forget that he's 24 years old. When I was 24 years old, and when anybody in here was 24 years old, there's no way I was even close to being that poised and that mature and able to talk about things that are that important in such, like, a small – that clip was 45 seconds, and it was the most impactful clip I've seen since the Tiger accident happened. Just the way he was able to express how he was feeling, how everyone was feeling, how you're right, how you need to say thank you before someone is gone. The whole thing was great. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. I want to be Colin Morikawa when I grow up, because he's just got it figured out.
Yeah, poise, man.
I was going to say the same thing. Power of the pause, man. Like, his pause brings gravity to how he says it, and it's like, and his poise, and it's just like perfect.
It's like he went to the Tiger Woods school of how to take things seriously and think about every single thing you say, and everything has to be impactful. It's almost like the way Colin Morikawa speaks reminds me of someone that knows that there's going to be a documentary made, like, after them one day, where, like, everything's very interesting and serious and impactful. Like, I genuinely think Colin Morikawa thinks he's going to be one of the best players of all time, even though he says he doesn't set those goals and aspirations. He just goes out and just plays golf each week, and whatever happens, happens. But, like, he's got that fucking swagger that you can't teach. He's, like, born with it, man. Like, it's crazy that this guy is so fucking mature for his age. He's already won 4 times. The PGA, what he did in San Francisco was just fucking outrageous. He is a one in a million type person. And, like, he's ready for big things. He's already done it.
He's so impressive. And when he speaks, you get such a sense of, like, oh, this is going to be important. Like, what is about to come out of this guy's mouth is going to be important, and you need to listen. And for him to have that presence and that kind of mindset at age, what is he, 24, 25? Yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, he just responded to one of my DMs, and I smiled like a little schoolgirl. Like, he's just – you want to talk about, like, a guy having, like, the juice? I mean, like, he's just the coolest guy in the fucking world. He's the coolest guy in the world. He is the coolest guy in the world. And everyone's going to be able to watch him interact with us tonight when this video comes out. When this podcast comes out, you can go on YouTube tonight and watch Colin Morikawa try and teach us approach shots. And you're going to see the way he speaks to us in that is very similar to the way he gave that post-game presser, where, like, I wanted to be like, dude, did you, like, prepare note cards before you came out here and just say everything perfectly? Because, like, that's just, like, what your brand wants. Like, he's perfect for his brand. TaylorMade, all the companies that he represents. It's amazing how good he is.
And it's being able to see those moments, not even coming, but to realize that you're in one and say something important. Like, the Tiger thing has clearly been in the news all week. Everybody's been talking about it. Everyone's doing these tributes with the black shirt or the red shirts and the black pants. And then he knows, he's like, oh, I just won this tournament. They're probably going to ask me about Tiger. I should say something that's going to impact people. But the thing about a guy like Colin Morikawa is there's no way he thinks about it that way. He is so impressive and poised and all the words, all the adjectives we've been using, that when a moment like that happens, he just knows what to say. Like, I do not think he goes into that thinking, what am I going to say when they ask me about Tiger? the question hits him and he just knows what to say. And which is even more impressive.
He's got like internal note cards that are just coming out of his brain. Because it seems as though a boardroom constructed how to respond perfectly for a week. Like, all right, like Collins, like got to make this fucking post game presser. How do we have him say the most impactful, perfect words so that everyone in the world loves him? And like they brought in people from France and Italy and everyone, all these cool places. And they all like studied the perfect response. And he just walks off 18 and says it.
Those moments where you and I just had one clearly during the Whoop ad read.
Oh,
I feel like I'm running downhill. Colin Morikawa has never, ever had that feeling. Not once.
He's how old is he again?
24.
He's the most mature 24-year-old in the world. I would vote for him for president.
The analogy of running down a hill is spot on. When you're just running downhill and out of control is exactly what
Colin Morikawa is, in those terms, is always strolling next to a lake. He's just – he's always right. In the zone. Always in the zone.
Yeah.
Never rushed. Never feels like he's got to say something. Never – it's just always very, like, matter of fact. And this is what I need to be saying, and this is what I actually feel. Like, when Colin Morikawa speaks, I think he actually feels those things. Some people are so media trained that when they say these things, you know that they're media trained. Like you're saying, Frankie, they fly in scientists – from all over the globe.
Right. You know,
the perfect thing to say is, but a guy like Colin Morikawa, he just has it.
And he puts them out of business.
What?
He puts those people out of business because he just does it on his own. He doesn't need a fucking speech, a speech person. I actually watched The King's Speech recently. What a good movie. But I'm watching some footage from the video tomorrow, and just like we tried to get him to. Like you mentioned the John Deere Classic in this video tonight, and he's like, and we're trying to get him to maybe say something about the John Deere. And he was so professionally, he like spun it in a way that he made us laugh. He's like, yeah, like Zach Johnson. Yeah. Iowa. That's your boy. Like he was so just perfect. And then like, he tells us at one point, he's trying to tell us how to get a better headspace in this video. And he's looking at me. I'm like, dude, I'm not even listening to what you're saying. Like, I can't even get into that because you have no idea. And he looks at me, he goes, dude, no one cares where you hit your golf ball. And I was like, what? He's like, what? You hit the bad shot and like 10 seconds later, you go hit another one. And the way he explains golf in that aspect to like an amateur golfer, where he's like, nothing you do out here matters. So why do you care when you're standing over the ball so much? Because I said, I get super nervous with the wedge in my hand. He said, why? What, you're going to hit a bad shot? You have another shot coming up right after that and nothing happens. So I was like, holy fuck, dude. Why am I ever nervous?
He's just got to figure out. And we didn't even really mention that he played spectacular golf on what looked to be one of the hardest golf courses in the world.
Oh, my God.
That place, I think I would shoot 300 there.
That place looks impossible to play golf at.
There's certain greens that you hear. I used to hear this in high school golf. There'd always be that one good golfer, and you'd be like, this is illegal. This is an illegal pin placement. I used to be like, I don't even know what that means, right? Like how far you can be away from a slope or whatever. And like there were a couple of fucking greens that were not just illegal in golf sense, but like the police had to be called. I mean, there were a couple of up and downs that Brooks had to hit in the beginning of the week where it's just on that fucking plateau to the point where I don't even know why they make those greens green. You know what I mean? Because the ball can never stop there. So you might as well end the green on the top of the plateau and just make that all fairway. Like they have these huge mounds of green where the ball in a million chances can never stop on that slope. So why even have that be green? Why even make the people mow that down to a green level? Because it's just useless. It's always going to end up in that collection area. Always.
I've thought about that with false fronts before. I'm like, well, then why do we have it? Like, if it's false and it doesn't.
Exactly.
Like, why does that exist? Just get rid of it.
Start the green where you can actually hold it on, and then everything else will be just not green, so it's not false anymore. It'll still end up in the collection area where you want it to. It's not like it's just going to stop. If you make it fairway.
It's like, why are you allowing the golf course to lie to me?
Yes.
That's right.
Why? But that's part of it, right? That's if you don't know that, that goes into
– dude.
Thinking about the golf course. I understand where you guys are coming from, but they're probably like, no, we want to trick people in this way.
I mean, they can make it concrete if they want, a cart pad. Right. It doesn't matter. The ball can't stop there.
There's a couple of those at Augusta too, where it's like, if you just hit it there, it doesn't stay on. So it's like, why even have it?
You might as well just have, yeah, like you're saying, a slip and slide. It's just, it's not a green. It's just making it harder for the greenskeeper to figure out how to mow that thing on a mountain going down and get as fine tooth fucking cutting as you possibly can. Oh my God.
When the cameras turned on Thursday and I was watching them on my television, you could see on the green, there were patches that were different colors. And I thought to myself, that's odd. Like, why are different colors, different parts of the green, different colors? And then I think it was Paul Azinger, who I think is a member out there, was explaining. He was like, no, they're not different colors. The sun is hitting them differently. They are on such different levels on different parts of the green that the sun is making the grass look like it's a different color. And that is a golf course that would make me cry if I ever played it. Like, that is just so, it sounds so impossible.
Yeah. I would think about that a lot when I play Pinehurst number two, where I'd be like, I don't get, like, most of the greens are not greens. Like, they're just nothing. They're not, it's not playable. I can't putt on it. My ball can't stop. I can't mark my ball on it. It just rolls away. So who came up with this idea where the green is just not playable? Like, what do we, where'd that come from?
Right.
somebody had a comment, one of the commentators, that was very telling, but they didn't want to poke the bear, no pun, because I'm about to talk about Jack Nicklaus. Ooh. But they were saying this was during the phase of Jack Nicklaus's architectural career where he loved the undulating greens, like almost a little too much, where if you want to read the subtext of that, it was almost too much, where he was making them so undulating that it was almost unplayable. But I mean, obviously PGA Tour players can play it. Colin Morikawa shot 18 under over a span of 4 days. But like for a regular person, I think if we went out there, we would just get absolutely destroyed.
It is amazing how we talk about how the courses are like impossible. And every week they just shoot, the winner just shoots a million under. Like,
the other thing that I don't get about like the greens. Yeah. And like, is the grain change. I always thought on a green, the grain always went one direction. But I think Azinger was making mention of it, Trent, you were talking about with a different coloration, is that like they'll hit it up the hill into the grain, then it'll roll down the hill with the grain. And I don't understand how that takes place.
Doesn't grain like have to do with like the sun? Doesn't it grow?
Right. That's what I thought. It kind of follows that on that path.
So maybe to Trent's point, like if there's swales and movement,
right,
like
a different angle. Sun,
so like, yeah, but like maybe the shadow affects the way the grain comes out. And this is, again, we need to have a fucking segment where an agronomist fucking tells us that we're being idiots and that we have no idea what we're talking about.
No idea what we're talking about. None. Huh.
I could try and make a phone call right now. And see.
So anyways, my only comment was I've never heard of a green having multiple grain directions. That was the only thing that, and I don't even, maybe I'm wrong about this, but that's what Azinger was making it sound like. So,
and we have no idea what we're talking about.
I don't have an answer. I don't.
That's just a mic drop, and let's
do a new topic. I just don't have an answer.
Great time for an ad read.
I would love to give you an answer on that. I just don't have it. And then on top of all the things we've already discussed, there's water just everywhere. There's water fucking everywhere. Cameron Smith, he was the leader on, I want to say like halfway through Friday,
yeah,
and then he deposited 5 balls into the water over the course of the day.
Like that's 2 on 1 hole. Yeah. 2 on 1 hole. Sad. Really sad.
Fucking really sad. He's got the mullet. He's got the mustache. He looks great. Just put five balls into the water over the course of 18 holes. That's tough.
They were commending him on being such a good guy, too, because he like duck hook pulled one left. And the announcer was like, I think he could actually probably like walk up a little further where the ball entered. But no, he dropped it like 100 yards back there. So like he dropped it on like a horrible sandy lie. Hit it from there, hit a wedge up, and then had another bad lie, went for the green, came up short in the water again. He was like, yeah, that's probably it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's probably your tournament right there.
But seems fun, like a good guy, probably. Nice Australian guy, but that was just a tough day.
Right.
People who wear Imperial headwear believe it's more than just a cap. Every stitch matters, and every moment should be cherished. We will never forget that each and every cap we make is a cap that will be proudly worn as a badge of honor, a commitment to be showcased, or a story to be celebrated. Our dedication to detail has driven us forward for over 100 years. So wherever you go, Imperial will be right there with you.
our good buddy, Brian Baumgartner, and we had a very funny, like we said, beginning to this interview. So enjoy this one.
Oh, hey. Hello. Our favorite guest.
I mean, I better be.
And I swear I don't say that to everyone.
We don't.
You do.
I swear we don't say that to everyone.
All right. Well, I will tell you this. Now, maybe it's because I play golf. I probably have more people talk to me about doing your show than any other.
Hell yes.
Really?
That feels good. Well, golf is it makes you, it like humanizes you guys, because when you see them on TV or in movies, like all of a sudden you're on the golf course, it makes you feel like just one of the boys. And I think that's why people love listening to these types of interviews.
Right. I mean, granted, most of the time I am on the golf course when people bring it up, so I guess it makes sense.
True, yeah.
That is listening to you and not, I don't know.
That is the feedback we get from, like, we recently had, who was it? Was it Joel Damon that we had on? Or who said that now when they're out on the golf course, they get more love about, like, oh, you were on Foreplay than they did before. I can't remember who it was.
We're just waiting on our third. He's just hopping off a call right now.
No problem.
He kind of runs the show. So if we just started the interview, it may get a little messy.
Frankie, let's see it. Let's just see you do it.
I wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah, it'll go off the rails very quickly.
We'll start talking about if Brian believes in the end of the universe, like we usually do.
Is that the question? Is that the standard question?
Well, I mean, we start talking. I mean, I was watching Cosmos recently, and it really blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think of you as such a deep thinker, but
man, I'm not. But it's just like, if there's, like, they say it's ever expanding, right? But like, what is it expanding into? Like, you have to think that if it's always getting bigger, what was it getting bigger? There had to have been something there to get bigger. You understand what I'm saying? It's like constantly breaking a wall. What's the wall?
Right. Like, what is the space that it's expanding from and to?
Correct. Correct.
That's a good question.
Fuck, man. And I don't smoke weed. I'm not high right now. And people constantly think when I'm thinking these things.
Wait. You don't smoke weed or you're not high right now?
Both. It's both. Okay. I'm too mentally unstable to do anything that alters my brain.
Okay.
Okay. I think there's,
why I can't hit my wedges.
I think there's a world where on one hand, it might mellow you out. On the other hand, it might make you go deeper into the abyss. And you're already so far out there that I don't think we could pull you back if you went that far.
We'll just stick to golf.
Keep being yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a finely tuned Swiss watch of a show.
Oh, my God, dude.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, boy.
I was just going to be the Debbie Downer on the call and say we do have a stop at 1:45. Just as a friendly.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
Yep. We can bang. We can make it happen.
We can bang or we can make it happen.
That was Jesus.
Holy shit. We can make it happen. This is, I don't know.
I wanted to say we can bang it out, but I didn't want you to think that we're just like on to the next, because you are our favorite guest. So I didn't want you to think.
We might as well just put this into the show. I mean, I think we've been recording. It's just, this has been one hell of an opening.
What top five guests?
Okay.
How about this? You don't have to include me, but I am in the running, and you don't have to go in order.
Okay.
Well, Kevin Kisner he's been our guy forever. Every time he comes on, he's just very casual, and he's very funny, and he can talk, and people enjoy that. So he's definitely on the list. Who else?
The Shark, Greg Norman.
Greg Norman
for sure. Really cool stories. Oh, Riggs has joined. Riggs, top five guests that we've ever had, not including Brian.
No, I didn't say not including me. I'm saying you don't have to say me.
Oh, man. The Shark is absolutely awesome. Jake Owen's awesome. Did you guys say Jake Owen?
We haven't said Jake Owen yet.
Oh, Jake Owen was really good, but he told some good stories. Dude, I just had the worst fucking timing mishap of all time.
What do you mean? We're just in it, by the way.
Yeah, we're in this, and we also have Brian for only a couple, 20 minutes, so I want to get into it with him.
Brian, how are you?
You were a little late.
How's your golf game?
You know, my golf game is golf. I've played twice very recently, and here's where I'm at. I think I've told you this before. All I want is at the end of the day for my first number to be 7. That's all I want. I don't, and so I think I went from 7 to like high 8s. Like, let's just say that. And that's really disappointing to me, but I love it. I'm a warrior. I played in that the ladies event, the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions event. And I had a really great time there and felt great the first day, and then, fell off a cliff.
So. Do you get down on yourself out there when you're not playing well? Do you have high expectations on the golf course?
You know, here's the thing about me. I believe in celebrating. I don't believe a remarkable shot, a Tiger behind the green on 16 chip in late in a tournament. Yeah, go nuts. And I want to see it. Otherwise, those guys are really good, so you should expect to be good. I'm not. So when I do something good, you're going to hear it for sure.
Right. You're not a act like you've been there before type person.
No, not on the golf course. Okay. Everywhere else, kind of. Not on the golf course. But I still occasionally I do get too down on myself. I do. Because I want to play well. And sometimes it just doesn't.
You're like, in terms of your scores, you're right in that spot where I feel like a ton of people live, which is you're constantly in your head doing the number over par you are versus like 8 over, because that gets you to 80. So I'm always doing that of like, okay, right. If I'm 5 over now, it means I got 2 shots to spare and I can finish with something that has a 7 in front of it. I just do that all day long. The whole round.
I try not to. I will say I shot 79. This, it did kind of sneak up on me, which should say like, you should stop it, because I shot 42, 37. So it was like, everything is a 4 on. Oh, I birdied that par. Everything's a 4. How did that happen?
What's your biggest discrepancy between 9 holes? Cause I had a few weeks ago, I had a 49, 36.
Yeah. I mean, I 42, 37 could very easily be 45, 37 or something. That happens.
Yeah, it can get real ugly real fast out there. You're
I think it was after I was after I talked to you, but I went out. Now this is, my home course is a 71. I shot 72 with lipping out on 18 and thought I have figured this game out.
Wow.
It's
a constant chase. And there's times when, and we spoke about this very recently, when you're playing well, everything in life is better. Like, your dinner that night is better. Your sheets are softer. Like, the water's warmer in your shower. All of life is good. And when you're playing shit golf, everything tastes like crap.
I know. And I've done this, and I actually was thinking about this the other day too, because it was kind of a similar situation. There was, I think I shot 78 or something. I was so happy. Exactly what you're saying. I came home. Everything is great. And then I was like, all right, now let's really examine it. I had an incredibly unlikely chip in on 16. So if I don't chip in and hopefully two putt, right now we're at 80 and I'm like, all right, it was fine. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, it's the stupidest game.
Really is.
I know.
When you play golf with people, like for the first time, does everybody try to bust out office jokes on the course on you the whole time?
If they're annoying.
Yeah. I would, if you play with Brian, I would recommend not doing that. That would be super annoying. Yeah.
I will say this, and this doesn't bother me because this happens just in life. And it'll be sometimes guys I know really well, I play with semi-regularly or know really well. And then I'll hit a really good shot on like the fourth hole and they'll say, great shot, Kevin.
Oh,
like, do you, I just let it go. And then somebody else will like give an elbow and then they'll feel terrible. And I'm like, I can't get worked up about that. It's like, yeah. What?
And especially you're an interesting one too, because you love The Office so much. Like I listened, well, I hope you do, because I listened to that oral history of The Office and it just, you could feel it in that. I mean, I loved that show. You pitched it on our show. I went back, I listened to it. I couldn't miss an episode. The way you talked about the history, how hard it was to get it from the English version to this, the way they would actually talk about, is this what a documentary would film? Do you hear the audio with Jim and Pam at this moment? Man, some of these times I was getting the chills sitting in the car listening to this. It really was a great job. So I feel like when someone sees you, they're like, wow, he really does care about the show he built and was on. So I feel like they do want to bring up the, like every time I look at you, I'm like, I want to talk about The Office. It's because I know you love it so much.
Yeah, I do. Well, I do. And also I think, and you know what, that show really, what I wanted to explore was why we're still talking about it now.
Yeah.
And like, truly, that's where we started, was like, why this has been going on a long time. And why is it right now the most watched show in television? And I'm including all new shows, everything else. Like, how is that even possible? And I think, you know, for me, one of the truly the discoveries through that is you don't, great shows, I mean, Hall of Fame shows, that I think that there is some similarities in this, but you know, most shows are not taking the time and effort to construct every moment and have it be true and genuine in terms of like what you're talking about the camera, or like, are people aware they're being filmed? Are they not aware they're being filmed? You know, all of that stuff. Most of the time, especially in comedies, you're just trying to make the funniest joke in that moment. And I think that the longevity of the show is about that, you know, it is because of that.
Yeah, I was amazed when you told us last time about the camera angles and how there's not a single shot in The Office that's not realistic. Like, it couldn't be shot from a camera that wasn't in the room in the documentary. And that blew my mind of how careful and you have to be, and how much of an art there is to it. Because again, like, we turn it on for a good laugh when I fall asleep and it delivers every time, but you don't think about the seriousness that goes into it.
Right. But I think that's the thing, is that those things are happening subconsciously to you, right? Like you're not supposed to be watching it and thinking about it, but the fact that you kind of can't exactly, who is that kissing someone back there? You know, like, you literally have to like work at it. That works subconsciously in your brain. And, you know, people joke about like the side looks to camera, right? But like, that's like it's because it's based in like a real thing. It's like, here's a stranger, a camera person is like, did you just hear the racist thing he just said? Right. Did everyone this in America? Did you just hear that? What was just said? You know? And so all of those things working together. And well, I mean, while we're on that subject, I have released a new podcast.
Yes.
Now, which is how I'm sort of describing it is that, the oral history of The Office, that was the story. And it was really an 8-hour journey through what happened and like who was chosen and why they were chosen and the choices that were made. But in trying to cut that down for 8 hours, because everybody was so into it, I sat down for 2, 3, 4 hours with people talking. I mean, I joked, not joked, like, Steve Carell and I sat down for like 3 hours, and then we finished and stopped rolling. And then I was like, hey, I'll walk you out to your car. We talked another 20 minutes by the car. I'm like, shit, we need to get the audio guys back down here. We're still talking about it. And so this is I'm releasing these full interviews. So it's like, if you listen to the first part to really hear the story, this is about really, really, really getting to know the people. And specifically, you know, the interactions with me, and when people sort of talk about like, oh, it's like you guys were a family. It's like, oh, no, we really were. Like we were forced, like a family forced to spend time together, but like a family, you know, all in our own, you know, ways, got to know each other and we built that.
Now, speaking on that part, oddly, whenever I'm looking for a good cry, and I don't know if this exposes something of me, I watch final table reads of long running TV shows. As like, that's like the most random thing to watch when you're feeling emotional. But I swear, guys, it really, I get into the mode of like, all right, if I'm Brian and I'm sitting at this table and I've known these people my entire, I mean, that's like your whole career, basically, of like, that is what you did. You went to work every single day with these people. What's that feeling like opening that final page? Because I've always wanted to know what that felt like being at that table.
Well, it's a really good point you bring up. And whether the show is good, bad, or whatever, like that's a journey. How I would talked about it at the time was like, so imagine for you, high school plus traditional college plus two more years. I mean, it was a decade. And for me, when we started that show, I wasn't very old. I was 31. So it was like my entire 30s going in, you know, turning 40 on that show. That's like a crazy time, like just as a person, and obviously some older, some younger. But either way, it's a decade. And yeah, I mean, you're now, you do sort of truly know, like nothing is ever going to be the same. Like, yeah. You know, we will not, you know, show up in our underwear at 5:45 in the morning and drink coffee and joke anymore. Like that is done. That will never happen again. And so, yeah, you kind of get into that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it gets me every time, man. I just watched the Harry Potter one because I mean, these kids are 10 years old and then they become 21, 22. And Daniel Radcliffe's like, I don't know what the real world is. I don't know how I get coffee. Like what happens now? Like this was my whole life.
Yeah. I can't go with you on the Harry Potter thing. But that's fine. That's totally fine.
You're not a Harry Potter fan?
It's not my thing.
Okay.
It's not my thing.
Okay.
It was probably like when the show was going, like I didn't really have time or take the time to like read a book. Like I was like, oh, this is a book. And then it became a thing. And it was never my like,
That's
it was
okay.
Never my jam. I'm not a hater.
We'll just fist fight the next time we play.
Yeah, I say you just broke Frankie Borelli's heart.
I'm not a hater.
No,
I'm
it's
not
okay. A hater. I actually understand what you're saying though. It passed you and then getting back into it.
Yeah, it just felt like a thing.
Yeah, that's okay.
You've heard us talk a lot about them, the new Sim driver, three wood, fairway woods. We're all extremely excited to get out there this next week. We've been talking a lot about the golf we're gonna play. TaylorMade makes it that much better. They're just the best equipment company that's ever been created. Colin Morikawa, who just won, rocks TaylorMade. DJ, best player in the world, rocks TaylorMade. Rory McIlroy, TaylorMade. Tiger Woods, TaylorMade. There's a reason these guys could pick any company they want, and they go with TaylorMade. The new Sims, you saw everybody put them in the bag right away. That's because they love them. So do yourself a favor. If you're in the equipment, you're looking for some new gear, the driver is phenomenal. The irons, my P770s are awesome. P790s are phenomenal. The spider, you can't miss with the damn thing. So
do cheat codes.
Cheat codes. The clubs are legitimate cheat codes. They're that good. So get over to TaylorMade Golf. Check out their website. Go to the store. Get fitted. That's a huge part of it is getting fitted. And, man, if you get fitted and then you get this Sim too, it is hard to not play good golf. And golf's just – think how much more fun golf is when you play better.
Oh, it's so much more fun.
Not comparable. When you're having a bad day versus a good day, it's just not even comparable.
You don't even need to play outstanding. You just need to be able to compete and act like you know what you're doing out there. That's the biggest part of golf. You can have so much more fun. You don't need to fucking shoot the course record. You just need to get through the day, and TaylorMade clubs allow you to do that. Like, you actually have a crutch that helps you get through the round as opposed to the other way where you feel like you're on your own little planet.
Spot on. So do yourself a favor. Go check it out. Go get fitted. Get TaylorMade in your bag, become TaylorMade athletes like us, and you'll play way better golf. I want to talk about the bean. So obviously one of the more iconic scenes from one of the more iconic shows is, of course, you with the chili and you spill it. It gets used. The GIF is all over Twitter all the time. People use that. And now you
use it for Jordan Spieth, and every time he can't win a tournament.
Every time I tweet, don't get overhyped about Jordan Spieth, I get Brian falling with a bowl of chili. So what's going on with the beans? It looks like you got your partner with Bush's Beans. You're whipping up your own stuff.
Yeah. So a lot of people may not know this. February the 25th is National Chili Day. There's a day for everything. I don't celebrate those days, but National Chili Day. I mean, come on. It's National Chili Day. And you know, here's the thing about it. When I was filming that scene, I never thought, oh, this is what I'm going to be known for for the rest of my life. That was not something that I'll tell a quick story and then we're going to get back to the beans, but I was traveling. I was on the road. I was working. If I've told you the story before, you can edit it out. But I am sitting at a bar and ordering food. I'm alone. I order food from the bartender. And I said, and I had like just ordered, and the bartender came by and like put food down in front of me. And I was like, oh, no. I just ordered. And they're like, this is from the lady at the end of the bar. And I looked down and it's a bowl of chili. So like some people get sent drinks. And I thought it was a genius. I thought it was a genius move. Yeah. I never thought, oh, this is what I'm going to be known for. But I was approached by Bush's last year. I do cook chili. I do love Bush's beans. I was like, this is kind of a no-brainer. And in terms of like brand symmetry, like me selling a Genesis or something, I'm like, okay, I mean, you know, that's a good car, whatever. But like... me and beans and chili, I don't know what could make any more sense. So yes, I partnered with them last year for National Chili Day. I introduced my recipe for my own personal famous chili, and you know we may have spilled some again.
Okay.
And so this year I am back with Bush's. And we are creating a chili pot. Ooh. That does not spill.
Wow.
And that is my goal. My goal is to not just make the best chili, but to not spill it, to be actually able to eat it. So we'll see how it goes on February the 25th, but they've been, such a great partner. Like, I'll sell underwear for you if you want, but chili, me, I don't know. It just makes a lot of sense to me.
Do you have any hard and fast chili rules? I know chili Twitter is a bit like steak Twitter, where you have to do it perfectly. Otherwise they'll be all over. Do you have any hard and fast things that you put in your chili, things that shouldn't be in chili? Any general rules?
My recipe is on Bush's website. And I do that. I do make it quite a bit. I think because people don't like beans and chili or whatever. No, that's ridiculous. I think the problem is I cook it a long time, right? So it's like a long, slow process. That's what I would prefer to do if I have the time. But the beans you add in at the end. You don't want soggy beans.
Don't want soggy beans. Brian. The golf is off and running right now. We're having really good tournaments every single weekend, it feels like. I mean, golf is really showing up. Jordan Spieth, you think he's back? Have you watched him in the last couple of weeks? He's going into Genesis, Riviera.
I have. I think he's playing. He's looking really good. I mean, who knows what happened? I mean, Berger just kind of slammed the door shut last week with that play, but. You know, if that doesn't happen, I mean, who kind of knows what happens coming down? I mean, he still had, what, 3-4 holes left at that point when that happened?
Yeah.
I think he's playing great. I hope he's back. I think he's good for the sport. And it's a Genesis this week, right?
Yeah, Riviera.
That's why I made the car joke. He typically plays well there, at least, you know, the first couple of days. So hopefully he gets himself in contention and up there on the board.
You know Riviera well? I mean, I feel like you've been out there a decent amount.
I've been out there a decent amount. Yeah. I'm not a member there, but I've been out there a decent amount.
Looks tough.
It's really tough. It's great. I think it is pound for pound. It is hard to find a better golf course with a, I don't know how to say it. Like each hole has a specific and unique challenge. There's no two holes alike. Sorry. That's like such a cliche golfer thing, but it really is true there. I think obviously number 10 gets a lot of, a lot of the attention or whatever, but what is it? 2-3, the like 270 yard plus par three. And
What about six with the bunker right in the middle of the green?
Bunker in the middle of the green. I've been in that bunker. Actually, what's worse is to be on the other side of the bunker from where the pin is.
So we've had this discussion. Like, if you're just a guest at Riviera and you hit it on the right side of that bunker and the pin's tucked in the back left, are you allowed to like nip a wedge over that thing? Like, do you have the balls to just like pull out a 56 degree and just try and chip this thing over? Like, are they accepting of people possibly taking divots out? Do you know what the standard rule is?
Do you know what? I don't, but I, there is a golf course that I am a member of in LA. There's not exactly the same. It's not exactly the same situation, but there are a few holes where if you are a good player and a chip is the right call, if you do that, I think I'm not sure, but I do know they allow you to, however, they ask you to move it toward the closest fringe. And so most of the time, if you're going to make that call, you're going to be pretty close to the edge, right? I guess you're not going to make that call from the middle of the green.
Right.
So I believe that's what our local rule is. I don't remember Riviera. I would not do it.
That's what we were saying.
Let's just say that.
Yeah. I'd rather try to power my putt through the bunker and get it through the other side as opposed to pull out a wedge and take a divot out of Riviera. There's no way I'm doing that.
No, I think for me, that is a scenario where I very clearly in my head say, well, let's try to save four.
Yeah, that we were pretty much saying the same. Like, we'll just putt it around. There's no number of strokes I could save on my scorecard at the end that are worth me potentially being the asshole that took a divot out of Riviera's sixth green.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the pros can, right? Totally. I mean, they're pros. Yeah. I suppose
They also they can nip them, I feel like, and they don't even take a divot. They just nip one up there and it's not a problem. Us, it's like 95% chance we take a giant crater chunk. Now you're just in the bunker. Everyone's like, what are you doing, dude?
I know. I will tell you this. I end up dead in the middle. This is the last round I played. Dead in the middle of a cart path. Well, I guess I was slightly toward having to drop in the bushes that were on the other side of the cart path. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to nip it. I'm just like, this 60 degree is pretty new. I don't really want to take a chunk out of this thing. No, I'm going to do it. I'm playing this is a match. I'm going to, and just blade. I mean, I just full on bladed it. Just, yeah.
Did the wedge survive? You just hit all ball?
No, because I was scared. It would have been like me trying to chip at Riviera, right? Like I would have ended up hitting it 50 yards, trying to not hit the grass.
Man, we had a couple weeks ago, I played in the Waste Management Pro-Am, and very first hole, it's like a shamble, and I hit a pretty good drive, so I'm like, my nerves are like out after that, not totally out, but I'm feeling pretty good, and we end up using our other guy in our group, just roasted this draw down the middle on one, so we've got like 42 yards to a front pin, and behind it is like this huge ridge, and the pro, Tyler Duncan, that's with us, is like, if you go behind the pin, like, it catches this ridge, you're going to miss the green. And so, like, we're all getting, like, nippy from 40 yards. And there's a pretty good gallery, like, behind the green. But it's maybe 40 yards beyond the pin because it's a front pin. First couple guys hit him in there pretty good. And I come up with this 60. And, you know, I try to open the face and, like, get it in there. And I just cold-bladed it. And I'm talking – when you have to scream four from 40 yards when, like, it was – the ball didn't get higher than knee height. And it was – Luckily, it missed everyone, but it was as embarrassed as I've ever been screaming for at these people behind the green. They're like, what the – how could we be in playback here?
Well, that's – and those big events that I play at that have, you know, like Tahoe or whatever, where there's 40,000 people out there or whatever it is, like it's when – you know, people say, is it nerves? And I'm like, no, I think it, in some ways it kind of helps me when there's people around. But you do one of those and yeah, you're kind of toasted. Like you're kind of like, all right, now on the next tee box, you're like, God, where are the people? And you're watching the people as opposed to everything else. But
yeah. And they're like, now they're nervous. Like when I'm hitting everyone, I can tell people are like, oh, this guy's a fucking problem out here. So it was... It wasn't even close. If you think about where I actually struck the buck, I missed the leading edge by like that far where you're supposed to actually hit it, which is almost the whole golf ball. It was very nerve wracking. So you've played in those more than I have. So credit to you for being able to hopefully not kill anybody yet.
Well, not yet.
well, look, we very much appreciate it. It's, you know, you got to be one of the more beloved TV characters in the history of television, I would say. So so kind of hearing you and talk about golf, and I know we talked a good amount about golf last time as well, but it's very cool. And we have to, I know we said this before, we gotta get out there, we gotta get some cameras rolling and have some fun, because I think the people would love it.
That would be great. You know, I was gonna come out to that waste management and something else came up, so I don't know, maybe next. That's a long time from now, but we'll do something soon.
Top five guest, Brian Baumgartner.
Top five.
Yes.
Debatable after the Harry Potter talk, but we'll see.
Frankie, just get it.
Dude, I love you, man. I do. I every time we have you on the list of the upcoming guests, I get crazy. I speed home. I get my whole thing ready. I can't wait to see you talk golf with you. I'm a very big fan of yours. I can't wait to listen to the podcast.
Thank you.
The long form interviews, I'm really looking forward to. Obviously, getting Steve Carell to open up about stuff, that's something as an Office fan you're waiting for. And for you to be able to pry stuff out of him, that's awesome. And the beans, the fucking beans, man. Let's go.
Beans, let's go. National Chili Day.
Hell yeah. National Chili Day. February 25th. Thanks, man. Really appreciate you coming on.
All right, thanks a lot, you guys.